Hey friends, I'm Ashley.
Hey you guys.
I'm Lainey.
And this is Haunted Real Estate. I don't know, but I think we're recording now.
All right.
So, ready?
Ready. What are we recording?
So this is Tales of the Triangle. We're talking about the Dragon Triangle today. So we are in Japan.
In Japan. All right.
So, to our friends in Japan, this is for you. So, back to the Tales of the Triangles, which are really fun to research. So, there is a belief that the triangle shape creates more paranormal activity. Really, these are just geographical areas that are basically hot spots of paranormal activity. But technically, no, there's no evidence that suggests that triangles actually create more activity. But there are several triangular type regions all over the world that just happen to see a lot more activity. And we kind of talked about that in the Alaskan Triangle episode and the Bermuda Triangle episode. So if you don't know, go back to those because I don't want to repeat everything we've talked about in those episodes.
I love all of those episodes, so please do go back to them.
I loved doing the Alaskan Triangle. I mean, I might need to just go back to the region and just find some more stuff because that was that I almost think that was even more fun than the Bermuda Triangle.
I think it was too. Yeah. So it would be so much fun to dive into and really get into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah. I agree. But yeah, so today is the Dragon Triangle, and it's very similar to the other, you know, vortices that we see. So, you know, UFO sightings, missing ships, planes, strange weather patterns. The weather patterns there, I think, are especially odd. And I'm not saying it's paranormal, but there are a lot of legitimate reasons. And if you listen to Alaskan Triangle and Bermuda Triangle, we do talk about some of the legitimate reasons why weird things happen. But this is like Alaska. It's in the Ring of Fire, which I think has more of a hotbed of activity because of the tectonic activity and volcanoes and sort of the like magnetic energy that comes along with all of that. So to me, I think that's why these particular areas, especially in the Pacific, why we see a lot of strange things happening, which like I said, there are legitimate reasons for why it happens, but there are a lot of unexplained things that have happened as well. So we're in the Pacific. The Dragon Triangle is, of course, a nickname. It's also known as the Devil's Sea or the Devil's Triangle. In Japan, it's known as the Meinoumi, which is the Sea of the Devil. So still pretty freaky. Oh,
that is very freaky.
So they don't like it either. So this is off the coast.
Is there any other context of why it's called the Sea of the Devil?
Because of all the missing people and weird things that have happened, and a lot of especially ships. And I'll give you some reasons why it's likely that more ships have gone missing than anything else. For Bermuda Triangle, I feel like a lot of ships have gone missing, and ships have been around a lot longer than planes. So of course, there's always going to be more ships than planes that have gone missing in these regions. But Bermuda Triangle, since planes have been invented, there's been a lot of planes that have gone missing. It didn't appear to seem as many in the Dragon's Triangle. And I think it has to do with more volcanic activity.
Okay.
But we'll get there. So this is off the coast of Japan, situated between the Philippine Sea, between Japan, the Philippines, and Guam. So the Devil Sea is more of a cultural term, and it's in the Pacific Ocean, but it's the nickname. So don't go looking for Devil Sea or Dragon Triangle on a map, because that's not really technically what it's called. But like I said, we're in the larger region of the Ring of Fire. So like I said, if you're not familiar with it, you should have learned it in world geography if you took world geography. It's a sort of circular or horseshoe region on the west side of South America, going up north through, you know, California, Oregon, Washington are all a part of it. Then you go up to the west side of Canada, Alaska, the Aleutian Islands. I'm making a horseshoe shape. Now I'm at the north, and then you're kind of going down and you're into the east side of Asia, which is going to include Japan as well. So going south on the east side of Japan, and that's all a part of the Ring of Fire. And it's called that due to the crazy amounts of tectonic activity, which include earthquakes and volcanic activity. And of course, when you have tectonic plates moving, you also have tsunamis that are created out in the middle of the ocean. So it's all pretty freaky stuff. But we're not talking about the entire Ring of Fire, which could probably be its own episode. I'm sure it has a lot of weird energy, but we're focused in on Japan today. So like I said, if you remember from the Bermuda Triangle episode, we talked about the history of weird Bermuda Triangle things happening all the way back to Columbus. Mm-hmm, yeah. This predates Columbus.
Predates? How far?
So we're back into at least the 1200s, but there's even some documentation that goes back to 1000 BC. So as much as 3000 years worth of weird data that's going on there. But yeah, Columbus, yeah, it was in his journals of weird things happening in the Bermuda Triangle, which wasn't even called the Bermuda Triangle at the time. None of it was really named. So yeah, Dragon Triangle dates back at least 400 years before Columbus. So why is it named the Dragon Triangle? Well, that is a cultural thing. Due to the amount of missing ships at the time, thousands of years ago, in keeping with Japanese and Chinese culture, they believed that it was actually dragons pulling down the ships.
What?
So today it's treated very similar to the Bermuda Triangle. So it expands past the dragon theory. Today we look at more weather patterns. Aliens, of course, have been brought up. Aliens have been talked about since the Cold War, just like in the Atlantic. But what's also weird about that and the Bermuda Triangle is that the two are kind of related. They are the exact opposite points of each other on Earth. So if you look at like the longitude, latitude points, and they are both considered part of those 12 vial vortices. We've talked about those vortices before, which have a lot of the Earth's electromagnetic waves that are stronger, more stronger than anywhere else on Earth. And this comes from How Stuff Works. So How Stuff Works said, the planet has 12 of these so-called vial vortices, and all 12 have mysterious disappearances. Thank you. Associated with them. These locations of the 12 vortices are theorized in 1972 by cryptozoologist and paranormal enthusiast Ivan T. Sanderson to help explain the mysterious disappearances and deaths that occur in these regions around the world. So the legend that gives the region its nickname, like we said, I started talking about this and then I cut into what I was talking about. Dragon Triangle, this comes from ancient origins. So the ill-fated region was known about by the ancient Chinese, with old fables referring as far back as 1000 BC. According to mythological accounts, a huge dragon inhabited the area of the sea and lay in wait for any vessel to pass. The dragon with the insatiable hunger would drag any boat that crossed its path into the sea, never to be seen again. Realistically, since these parts of the oceanic area in full Okay, I did literally copy paste this from ancient origins, but it sounded kind of weird. Since this part of the oceanic area is full of subsea volcanoes. Okay, that makes sense. It has been speculated, debated, and discussed that the eruptions from the volcanoes could have initiated and substantiated the premise of dragons sucking ships and its crew into the ocean depths. The fire-breathing monster of legends may have been volcanic eruptions. So due to all the undersea volcanoes, that is a valid reason, and I talk about it later, but that is a valid reason as to what could have sunk many ships, especially thinking about how much that would heat up the water. So you can see where they could get fire-breathing dragons from undersea volcanoes. In addition to that, so that's plausible why they would think undersea volcano, or I'm sorry, why they would think dragons when it might be undersea volcanoes. But on top of that, two of the largest reptiles in the world kind of hang out in that area as well a little bit. So
reptiles?
That's exactly what I was going to tell you. So that is the saltwater crocodile and the Nile crocodile. So saltwater crocodiles get up to 23 feet long. So imagine you're a sailor or a fisherman in, year 1000 BC. You see a little volcanic activity underneath. You see a 23-foot crocodile. You can understand why they might think of dragons. That kind of goes together. And Nile crocodiles can get as much as 20 feet long. So I imagine people seeing that coupled with volcanic activity. I understand where the dragon theory came from 1000%.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So some of those early accounts of things that were going on in the Dragon Triangle. So this dates back to the 11th century. Remember from world history, Genghis Khan. He was the founder of the Mongolian Empire. So I will recap him a little bit because I'm not going to expect you to remember everything about Genghis Khan.
Thank you.
I do it for you. So he was the Mongol... He was the Mongol leader from 1161 to 1227. He established the largest land empire in history. He expanded as far as Poland through East Asia down into Syria. So his territory was about the size of all of Africa, which is nearly 12 million square miles. So
that's huge.
He did the thing. Yeah. Basically, everything the light touches belonged to Genghis Khan.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So not really. It's just Mufasa, my little Mufasa there, explaining territory to his descendants. Now, Genghis Khan did slaughter and rape many. This is a crazy little fact here. As much as 8% of people in the former Mongolian Empire, so like people living over in Asia, related to Genghis Khan, which is 0.5% of the world's population, or 1 in every 200 people are descendants of Khan.
That is disgusting.
He was sticking it everywhere he could. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So both fascinating and disturbing at the same time. He did have one main wife, but he would later go on to take 6 more wives and have as many as 500 side women. So he fathered many children.
Even as I can't even imagine, but like, could you really truly want 500?
No, I know 500 different women. Like,
that sounds awful.
It does sound awful. I guess even I always, this is
500 different men is awful. Like the most.
It is the most.
Anyone can take is like, I don't even know, but like.
Yeah.
200? That's still
You don't want to like perfect your craft with like one person. Maybe a few people, but like, I kind of feel, this is maybe marriage talking, but like you kind of get better at it with like somebody you're familiar with. You spread it out amongst over 500 people. It's kind of like first date type stuff. I mean, I guess he's the man and he's probably controlling the whole situation, but I don't know.
And you're just doing it to do it. It's like, it's honestly like masturbating. That is super weird.
One wonders awkward. If anyone talked to Genghis Khan about masturbating. One maybe wonders. He just masturbated women.
Ew.
I don't know.
I don't judge him, but I do. I find it weird. There's a question.
I don't think it was passionate love making to hundreds of women. God, this is having a recording at the office. Lynn is somehow louder than my own children, and I'm recording on a Sunday night. Yeah. On top of that, STDs. All the STDs, like, we didn't even know about back then. I mean, couldn't have been good. So there's just no way that had to have been clean.
Yeah.
So he only recognized 4 sons with his main wife as his legitimate heirs. So if they didn't come from his wife, they weren't his legitimate heirs. They were just, you know, his side lady's children. So his oldest son had as many as 40 sons himself. So you can see why so many people are related to the Khans.
Yeah.
The Khans procreated like nobody's business. And I mean nobody. There are over 16 million descendants today related to the Khans.
That's insane.
Yeah, like those numbers are crazy. So now that I've probably painted him as like a pretty rapey guy, he did have a lot of historical significance. He was one of the first leaders and civilizations to allow freedom of religion, which is pretty great. And he did forbid the selling and kidnapping of women, maybe for other people, but like, I think he took on, you know, some women that he took from other civilizations, but I'll just. Yeah. So ultimately, Genghis Khan died as a result of actually being thrown off of his horse. It took several months, but he did finally succumb to his injuries, and he did ultimately die in August of 1227. So then Khan's grandson, Kublai Khan, became one of his successors. There was a lot of territory, so there were several Khans that were kind of spread out, but Kublai Khan was the greatest of his successors. Ultimately, he completed the conquest of China, which was a big deal. China's a huge territory.
Yeah.
So he completed the conquest of China, which his grandfather had started, and he oversaw all the Mongol territory, which he ultimately ended up serving over that and China as well. So in Kublai Khan's conquest, he had his eye on Japan. So Japan, of course, is an island, so they have that sort of natural protection from the water around it. It's a little bit harder to get to. So in 1274, after conquering Korea, Kublai Khan dispatched a fleet of 900 ships carrying 15,000 Chinese and Mongolian soldiers, along with 8,000 Korean warriors, to now invade Japan. I'm not sure if Japan knew ahead of time, because obviously communication in the 1200s would have been different, but that has to look pretty scary. 900 ships coming your way from this leader who has conquered a lot of territory on the mainland. So
yeah,
these troops engaged in an epic battle on the island of Kyushu. I'm so sorry if I mispronounce this. I think it's Kyushu, which is one of the four main islands of Japan. Despite their numbers, the Mongols actually suffered a really embarrassing defeat at the hands of a small group of samurai at the Battle of Hakata Bay. So it kind of reminded me of like 300, like this group of smaller soldiers defeated the group of many. But you know what? It is advantageous to know the land. For sure.
For sure.
So, obviously, a defeat pissed off Kublai Khan. He was consumed by rage, and he was not about to give up. He was like, nope, I'm ticked off that this little group of samurai took us down, so I'm going to come back bigger and badder. And Japan knew this was going to happen. They were freaked out because they knew they were only going to be taken by more numbers. So they were pretty panicked. And they began building walls along the coast because they knew this was not the last of the Mongol attacks, and they were basically just waiting for the next one. So Khan's second army to Japan now would consist of 140,000 soldiers, 4,400 ships launched in 1281. So Japan,
that's insane.
Japan got word. I know that those numbers are insane, but he was not about to be taken out again. Kublai Khan had a legacy to hold. His grandfather took over all this territory. He successfully took over China. He was like, I'm not letting this island defeat me. So he sent soldiers in droves. Now, Japan got word of this, and they were freaked out and literally were just praying for a miracle, because those kinds of numbers were going to be really hard to not be defeated unless there was some sort of miracle. The miracle did in fact come, and it came in a devastating typhoon. In the US, we would call these a hurricane. So this typhoon is actually called a kamikaze. So this storm went on for 2 days, destroying Khan's fleet, and ultimately did prevent the invasion. But over 40,000 soldiers were lost at sea. So this was actually known as the most significant naval catastrophe in history. So that was also very embarrassing to Kublai Khan. And actually, it was so embarrassing that they were forbidden to talk about it. So all people knew for a very long time was that 40,000 soldiers went missing. That's it. They just knew they went missing. Obviously, some people knew that a storm existed because there were a lot of survivors of it, even though there were a lot of deaths. There were people that knew that it was a storm, but a lot of people, because it was forbidden to be talked about, they didn't really know the whole story. So now you go back to dragons pulled them out from the sea. They don't want to say that a storm came and just wiped out the ships.
Yeah.
But this tale went on for hundreds of years that a dragon dragged down these ships, and many people, like I said, they just knew that the men disappeared and vanished into the sea. So stories circulated for years about what could have happened. The story became basically a fable, and the true story became fuzzy. But thankfully, to modern technology, we have found artifacts and a lot of wreckage from Kublai Khan along the Japanese coast. So today we know it was a crazy storm that took out the Mongols, that fleet, at least those couple of days. But after that, Japan remained Mongol free. They never succumbed to the Mongol Empire. But imagine, had that storm not happened, how different Japan could look today had the Mongols been able to take over and Kublai Khan had been successful. History could have been very different.
It very well could have.
So, of course, something like this happening in, you know, the 13th century, I guess that is the 13th century. It's easy to understand how these legends go on and people believe in dragons and sea monsters. And there's no modern kind of communication. So, and of course, back then, ships are going to go missing because you don't have any kind of modern communication. So, you know, they're just lost at sea. Same thing with Bermuda Triangle. But it is weird now that we do have modern technology when ships go missing and planes without any kind of word as to what happened, zero communication. So we know it has to be something that happens fairly quickly because even if they were losing sight, they couldn't see, you communicate that. So like I said, ships have gone missing at an alarming rate in the Dragon Triangle with no word, just completely vanish. Whatever happens is so quickly that they cannot send any kind of alert or, you know, sound the alarm. Finding missing ships is also difficult when the ocean is around 6 miles deep. So once that wreckage sinks to the bottom, it is pretty much unrecognizable. So you can't even say if that is the ship you were actually looking for or not, which just continues to kind of fuel the mystery as to what happened. You're talking about extremely deep parts of the ocean when you get to the Pacific. And we're not even far from the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest part of the ocean. So the most amount of missing ships in the Pacific seem to be through the 1940s and 50s, when, like I said, that technology did start to exist at that time. They have sonar, they have radar, but I'm sure it's no coincidence that during World War II and the aftermath, but mostly during World War II, of course, it makes sense that ships are going to go missing because you have ships that are deliberately being sunk by enemies. But the 1950s is the Cold War era, where people are more freaked out, right? There's not actual like hand combat, right? That's why it's a Cold War. But you do have the space race going on at the time. So now you have aliens that start to enter the theories as to what happened, you know, why ships have gone missing. So in the midst of the space race and sci-fi becoming a thing, the aliens theory starts to spread, trying to explain why ships and crews are going missing. So during World War II, though, there was a pilot in 1944. He was in combat at the time. So this isn't, I don't know how long he was flying around, but because he was in combat, I guess I don't assume he was flying around for a very long time. He had to be on higher alert. So he's not just a pilot in the middle of the night who like sees some weird lights. He is in combat. He said there was a serpent-like monster swimming through the water. Only its head was above the water, but it's like you can kind of see like ripples of its body. He swore it was dragon-like. And again, this is 1944, so not all that long ago. He estimated the creature to be approximately 150 feet long. It was described Wow. as serpent-like with two triangular wings, which was helping it swim. So he was...
I like how you used your hands to say helping yeah. him swim. Bloop, 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 bloop. It was just swimming.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like when I'm on video, I have to be a little bit more animated.
Well, it's just you and I video. If this is a shared video, then I object. Because I'm only half a head here.
You are. I only see your nose up. No, we'll put out a video one day, but it doesn't have to be today since this is the first time we're recording on this platform. So he was the only witness, so it has not been confirmed, but I did find it interesting that he was in combat at the time because I feel like sailors would be more likely to see things, right? Because you're out in the sun, it's been days and days or months or weeks, you know? But he was flying over in combat at the time, so he should have been kind of on high alert, you know, to whatever he was fighting. But he saw this 150 foot serpent-like creature. So I just don't feel like...
Could you imagine if you were him, though?
No.
That would be terrifying.
I know. And thank God for cell phones today, because you feel like, well, maybe not in combat would they be whipping out their phones, like, taking a picture, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. And you know what? These AI photos, too, I don't know if I'm going to believe anything that I see. It's so annoying.
I 100% agree with you. I hate AI photos.
Yes. Like, why are we even doing that?
It came up out of nowhere, and now it's like everyone we see every day, like versions of them, and that is what AI is.
Yeah.
So how can you expect us?
How am I going to believe anything? I'm going to be like, oh, that's AI. And so like, no, it's true. Nope. It's AI. I have no idea. So this is another one. So the serpent, the 150-foot serpent that was seen by one pilot, but this one has been reported several times by different accounts for years and years. So there's supposedly a phantom woman on a ship that has been seen. So for decades, sailors kept reporting seeing a ship that is not like any other ship, that not like a common ship. And this is what kind of makes it weird. It's not a modern ship. The actual, and this probably goes back to the culture, but they said the box was shaped like incense. So I imagine like a long square box. That's what the ship looked like. It was described as an incense box in several sources. So this incense box ship has this woman on it, and she's just traveling alone. Nobody knows what this is about or like what she's doing, but this unusual vessel has been seen many times. Sometimes it's seen with lights kind of coming up out of the water, kind of illuminating her.
All right.
But we don't know, but it has been reported several times. And then this one was kind of weird. There was a pilot during World War II. He did communicate. So he communicated to those on land that he saw something in the sky and that the sky was opening up. And then immediately after went silent and the pilot and the plane were never seen or heard from again. But he literally said the sky was opening up. That so one was weird.
The sky is opening up and then he just went off radar.
Yep. He went off. The radio went silent. Everything went silent. Never seen, never heard from again. So that one has caused a lot of rumors because one, it's super ominous, but some people said that God literally grabbed him from the sky, but a lot of people believe that it was UFOs.
Yeah, I can believe UFO or there's something else we just don't know about. Like I always, there's another thing out there that we don't know.
There might be another thing out, something that's just better at hiding.
Something. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Where do people disappear to? That's always the question in my mind.
I know.
Where did they go?
Where did they go? Like they still have to be here, but maybe they don't. Maybe they go to another realm or
something. They're in another realm or another time.
Mm-hmm. I know the Alaskan Triangle had a lot of stories that made me feel like it was going into another time.
Yeah.
So this one, it's hard to say.
It's weird. I don't know. I believe there is another time and another place and another being.
Yeah.
But I just don't know where it ends or where it begins. It's just there.
Yeah.
I have no other explanation for it.
Yeah. I have no idea. But I can understand why people would think that's aliens, especially when somebody says, hey, guys, the sky is opening up, and then you go silent. What are you supposed to do with that information?
And if I said that to you or someone I loved, I would hope they would dive deeper into it.
I know, but how do you dive deeper into that? Because you're talking about airspace. Yeah, it's hard to go investigate that area and know exactly where they were and exactly what happened at the time. But pilots and sailors see weird things.
They do. And it drives me nuts because I feel like there's somebody that knows what they're talking about or like, you know, like you have your weird quirks. If you said something weird to me, I feel like I'd get it. But if somebody just, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like if they just left the world with one sentence, I would
say more things.
I would have to dive into
that. Do you see a light coming from the sky? Is it like a hand coming at you? Yeah. I guess I would hope you would leave me with some more details.
Same. I would hope you would too. But yeah, it drives me nuts. That's this whole thing. It drives me nuts because we'll never know.
I know. These are all so mysterious.
Yeah.
So
will we even know when we're dead?
Yeah, you don't know. Some people believe that Amelia Earhart went missing in this area.
I know, but when I die, will I get to know the answer of Amelia Earhart?
Gosh, I hope so. I hope we all do. I hope
we all get a bunch of answers.
Like when we die, are we just going to like have the knowledge or am I going to get a sit down with some people like, hey, you've been here for a while. Can you explain to me these mysteries? Yeah. And we just have a discussion. God, I hope so. I've been saying that for years because I ponder these things all the time. I think about Amelia Earhart on a daily basis and I wonder what happened.
I don't think of her on a daily basis, but I do truly wonder what happened.
Yeah.
That will be one of my first questions to God.
Yeah. I have a lot. And oftentimes I just say, hey, God, add that to my list. I hope he's keeping a list because I've been saying that since I was like, I don't know, 13 years old. Just keep it on that list. So leading up to our next tale. So there have been at least 20 submarines that went missing and 9 ships in a 4-year time span between 1950 and 1954. Okay. Again, World War II was over at this time. World War II ended in 1945. All the submarines, the ships, all had radios and other forms of communication. So between 20 submarines and 9 ships, only one of those ships actually did call for help. All the other ones went missing without a word. So this equates to 700 people in that 4-year time period that went missing in this area.
Damn. Just 700?
Just 700. Yeah, in 4 years, that's a short time period to go missing. And again, these aren't casualties of war, so we can't say, well, you know, they could have been, you know, they've been torpedoed or something like that. That's not what would have happened here. World War II ended in 1945. We are here in 1950 to 1954, so between 5 to 9 years after World War II, 700 people went missing in the Devil Sea. This is when Japan was like, you know what? It is high time we start researching this area. So the early 1950s, actually, it was in 1952. So it was only like in the midst of these things happening. In 1952, Japan sent out the Kaiomaru number 5 to check out the Bonin Islands, also known as, and I know this is where I'm going to butcher it, so I'm really sorry, the Ogasaru. No, Ogasawara Islands. Okay, I'm so sorry. I'm going to go with Bonin because there's a much better chance that I'm pronouncing that correctly. So these are 30 islands that are clustered together, and they're home of the Bonin flying bat. There are 195 other endangered birds on this island. So the Kaiomaru number 5 went out in search of kind of researching what's going on in this area. Why are ships going missing? And the Kaiomaru number 5 went completely silent September 24th, 1952. Nobody could reach the ship or its 31 crew members, which is so creepy because in the Bermuda Triangle, we talked about ships that went out in search of other ships that went missing.
Yeah.
So I'm not signing up for that job. So all anyone knew for years about the Kaiomaru was that it just vanished. Japan was not offering up any kind of explanation. The government, nobody was talking about what happened to the ship. Just sorry, the ship vanished. It never returned. That's it. So of course, legends grew and people fill in the blanks. People don't like a mystery. That's why I don't understand. Like, I know there's things governments don't want to tell us. And I do understand that actually. I've talked about that before. You know, like if the government knows that aliens exist, I might be okay not knowing about it. Like, let me know if there's something I need to do or if I'm in danger. Otherwise, if I'm just going to sleep better at night, living in ignorant bliss, I'm okay with that. And maybe that's what the Japanese government was trying to do here, was just trying to not alarm people. But it alarms people when you don't say anything and people imagine much worse. And based on what they ended up telling people, I feel like they just should have said it at the time. Because families didn't have answers. And so conspiracies grew. The Japanese government quarantined off this area for decades, which did not help the reputation of the Devil Sea. So again, stories from dragons and other sea creatures were rampant, but the Bonin Islands have a deceptive look, and this is what likely caused it, but I will tell you the Japanese government being so closed mouth about it is going to always call into question if this is the truth or not. So the waters are stunning. We'll put it on, it'll be on Instagram. The waters are stunning, but it is harboring a bit of a secret. It has a lot of underwater volcanoes surrounding it.
Oh.
So what we have theorized likely happened was that an underwater volcano exploded at the site of the Kaiomaru number 5 where they were conducting their research. And the water became so hot so quickly it lost buoyancy and sank before anybody could do anything. The crew couldn't escape. But my question, again, I'm not a sailor, I'm not a captain, I don't know much about boats. But even if the water got that hot, does it sink immediately before anybody can even run to a radio and just say, like, we're sinking, or like can't say anything?
I mean, how fast did it sink?
We don't know. We're theorizing this is what happened.
Got it.
But this is where it's, I can imagine that's what happened. But does that still happen so fast that nobody says anything and the Japanese government decides to just quarantine off the area and not tell anybody what happened?
I feel like I would be screaming about anything happening.
Yeah, it is just super, super weird. So like I said, I mean, I'm not a boat person. I'm not sure how great the technology was at the time. Maybe the radio didn't work. Maybe the radar, the sonar, maybe that all wasn't functioning the way it was supposed to. I don't know. But the Japanese government has since stood by the underwater volcano theory, which is plausible. I guess I'm just like, but they still, you're telling me 700 people plus the Kaiomaru, nobody could say anything? I don't know. That to me is a, I don't know.
It's a little weird.
So while we're not here today to solve the mystery of the Devil's Sea or the Dragon's Triangle, we know it's at the very least a dangerous area to traverse. So there are many people that have survived and sailed through. They do talk about the dangers and they do not downplay the region. They say that the weather can turn on a dime with no warning. There are rogue waves that will smash in and take out ships. And we talked about some of that during the Bermuda Triangle, but the theories are very similar. Electromagnetic energy in the world that can cause systems to malfunction. If we take it a step further, we can also talk about the fact that due to energy in the area, we talked about this during the Alaskan Triangle, there could be a portal. Maybe that is what pulled that pilot. Maybe he did go to another world. Who knows? But there are a lot of people that believe these 12 vortices are also the site of portals to go to other worlds, other times maybe, I don't know. But the energy allows for supernatural and paranormal creatures to cross over into our world. And I'm not saying that's what I necessarily believe, but I definitely agree that that kind of energy can cause a lot of unexplainable things to happen. It is a hotbed of volcanic activity, which creates whirlpools, toxic gases that can be released in the air. And of course, just moving tectonic plates alone can cause tsunami and rogue waves. But like I said, I'll leave you here with this thought. This region is not far from the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest part of the ocean. There are creatures that we know are in that area that we have never discovered. We don't know anything about them. We don't know they exist yet. Or maybe we never will. So who's to say that there isn't some serpent-like creature that maybe comes up every now and then that's hanging out in the Mariana Trench?
Who is to say?
Who's to say?
Who?
And for now, that is what we're going to leave you with. Some things to ponder about the Dragon's Triangle. I did order a book, so it did not come when I wanted it to come, thanks to the holidays.
I ordered a book.
Yes, I've not read it yet. So there might be a part two. We're not done with the triangles. I don't even think we're done with Alaska because I'm already feeling antsy to go back. And we're right across the pond talking about Japan. Alaska's like, hello, you can wave, kind of. You won't see them wave, but you can wave. So if you guys have any recommendations or interesting real estate stories, you make sure to send that over to us at hauntedrepod, that stands for real estate, pod@gmail.com, hauntedrepod@gmail.com. And go follow us on Instagram if you haven't, at haunted.real.estate. And if you haven't, please rate and review us on your preferred podcast platform. We'd so appreciate it. And lastly, if you're looking for an agent in the Houston market, give myself or my husband, Casey, a call and just go ahead and email us at hauntedrepod@gmail.com and we'll get you to the right place. Anything else you would like to add, Lanaye?
I think you're wonderful, and I think our listeners are wonderful. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you for being special and amazing and sticking with us. Oh my God, my heart fell out of my chest. Lynn dropped a bell or something. Oh, okay.
I thought your heart was falling out of your butt just then.
Yeah. Gosh, she's rowdy. She's literally worse than the kids, and I'm here at a Sunday evening. That's so funny. Okay, well, I love you. Glad we, even though it took forever to get that done, glad we could finally do it.
I love you too. And I hope you have a good evening with your children and your husband.
Thank you. Tell Maxine I said hello. She'll know what it means.
She'll know what it means. Yes.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.